On this 31st day of January 2011 in San Diego, we're reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 18, The Perfection of Renunciation, text number 23. 1823. Niyatam
sangarahitam.
Araga deshatakritam.
Araga deshatakritam.
Apalaprepsuna karma.
Apalaprepsuna karma.
Yattat sattvikamuchyate.
Yattat sattvikamuchyate.
That action which is regulated and which is performed without attachment, without love or hatred, and without desire for fruitive results is said to be in the mode of goodness. Purport. Regulated occupational duties as prescribed in the scriptures in terms of the different orders and divisions of society, performed without attachment or proprietary rights, and therefore without any love or hatred, and performed in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of the Supreme, without self-satisfaction or self-gratification, are called actions in the mode of goodness. Om Jnanatamaram Dasya Jnanandana Salakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, Srila Prabhupada does this a lot. Krishna is speaking of things in the mode of goodness. He has so many things. Charity in the mode of goodness. In the 17th chapter, we had austerities in the mode of goodness. Austerities of the mind and the body and the words. And then he speaks of action or whatever in the mode of passion and ignorance. Now, in the when he's speaking of the... Krishna is speaking of the mode of goodness, it's very similar to Vaidhi Bhakti, to Krishna consciousness activity in a regulated way. That's why it says niyatam is the first word here, regulated. So Srila Prabhupada, in his inimitable way, he puts in the Krishna consciousness element here, even though really the mode of goodness is the stepping stone just before Krishna conscious activity. All of these things you can say apply, except the one element in this verse is that it's not. There's nothing mentioned about Krishna here. But Prabhupada in the purport, he makes it clear. So what we can get from this is that for those of us who are endeavoring and hoping to advance in devotional service, the mode of goodness is very important. All of these kind of regulations here, just to be regulated, to be free of attachment, to try to be free of material attachment, that's mentioned twice here, araga dveshita, and that's without love or hatred. So the idea is that so many times in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about being equipoised. I mean, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, so many things. So that kind of attitude, if one can cultivate it, gives one the calmness of mind. Sattva. Sattva means steadiness. It means clarity with which one can actually practice devotional service. And so much of the activity in this temple is really in the mode of goodness. Keeping clean. Now, keeping this temple clean is certainly an act of devotional service, but it's also an act of sattva. You see what I'm saying? Regulation of the sleep and the eating, which keeps one, body and mind healthy and regulated, is in the mode of goodness. Avoiding things that agitate the mind, things in the mode of passion. Seeing, hearing music, reading books or movies or whatever that will agitate the mind, that's in the mode of passion. You avoid that in Krishna consciousness, and if you want to be in the mode of goodness. So here, each one of these, Srila Prabhupada is giving, like in the purport here, after the whole list, and performed in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of the Supreme. That's not there in the verse, but Srila Prabhupada adds that. And he was once asked why he does that. Sometimes, yesterday I had a conversation with Tukaram Prabhu, the president of Laguna Beach, and he always loves to discuss philosophy. I called him about, I just wanted to know when the post-Gopinim festival was, So he answered that question, then we got into a whole philosophical discussion. And one of the things he was talking about is, just like I mentioned, chapter 17 is this threefold austerity in the mode of goodness. And then at the end there, in text 17, it says, this threefold austerity performed with transcendental faith by men not expecting material benefits, but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme, is called austerity and goodness. That part about engaged for the sake of the Supreme isn't there You see? But Prabhupada puts it in there. And the reason why he does so, he made it very clear, is that he doesn't want to give anyone any chance to misinterpret the Bhagavad Gita, that it's not meant wholly and solely to come to the conclusion of bhakti yoga, to surrender to Krishna and practice devotional service or bhakti. It's not that we're, you know, it's not, the purpose isn't to bring you the mode of goodness. It's not, you know, the purpose to make you calm or to get mukti, even liberation. The purpose is, you know, very nicely enunciated at the end. Think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your obeisance to me. You will certainly come to me. I promise you this because you're my very dear friend. Give up all other so-called dharmas. Surrender unto me alone. I promise you I'll protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Those two verses kind of encapsulate the purpose of the Gita. So Prabhupada doesn't want to give any leeway to any speculation. So sometimes he'll give us the inner meaning that Krishna has in mind in the overall Gita. So, any questions on these points?
There are similar verses in the 11th canto when Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. Uh-huh. And we have three here, like one for Sattva Guna, one for Raja. He has four there. He always talks about them. This is transcendental. This is a separate verse for that.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, the thing is, Krishna will get to that in a few verses.
It's not here, Prabhupada wanted to add it to the
And in a few verses, it's going to be all bhakti. You know, I mean, he's just going through now. Yes, Prabhu?
So it's saying that, you know, you should perform it without attachment, without love or hatred, without desire for fruit and results. If you're doing devotional service, though, I mean, well, shouldn't you have love for your devotional service? Shouldn't you be, you know, desiring to get some good results of service?
Yes. In this context, the raga and dvesha refer to material attachment and material revulsion or repulsion. You know, you have to see what the context is. Raga is a very important word. We want raga nuga bhakti. You know, that's an inherent part of the sadhana, to try to attain spontaneous attraction and love for Krishna.
I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, for example, like taking the bath in the morning on winter days, it's difficult. So one should not like.
Of course.
And then in the summer, early taking an early morning bath could be pleasurable, but one should not do it because it's pleasurable.
That's right there at the beginning. You know, you say that nice section on the sage of steady mind. You know, dukeshu na vignmana, sukeshu vigataspaha. Vita raga baya krodha stita de manuruchite. It's practically the same idea. Giving free of raga, material raga, and therefore free of fear and free of attachment. And dukeshona, not being disturbed. When normally disturbing things happen, to have the equanimity of mind. And same thing with sukha. Sukeshu vikataspaha, not being harsha, you know, harsha marsha baya. It's a constant theme in the Bhagavad Gita. But really, practically speaking, to come to that platform of not being disturbed in disturbing circumstances, not being overwhelmed with the desire to enjoy when that presents itself, you have to have that inner Krishna consciousness. You have to have the higher taste. You have to be experiencing Krishna consciousness. That's practical. You know, we can see from society.
Also, this aphala prepsuna, like not wanting these
fruits.
I think it's dhanam janam sundarim kavitam, those things.
Yeah, any kind of fruit, any kind. Then why do the work? That's the point. The only reason, as you mentioned, the reason is because of bhakti, because you want to develop your natural attraction for Krishna. And it's true that even in the early stages of devotional service, you can feel some hints of that. You know, that when you see the deity, you perform some service just out of duty, but then, you know, it's a very healthy, you know, austerity that you perform before Krishna. You become before the deities and you have a nice ecstatic kirtan. There's a little moral, attachment there. Krishna's reciprocating. You know what I'm saying? Even in early stages. So then when the motive is wholly and solely 24 hours a day just to please Krishna, you know, that is the perfection of apala prepsuna. It's not a question of you don't want any fruit. You know, you want Krishna to enjoy the fruit. You ardently want Krishna to enjoy the fruit of your work. Not that you just don't. These are all negative things. Be regulated, be free of sangha. Then why do it? That's the negative side. The positive side is doing it for the satisfaction of the Supreme. See, Prabhupada puts that in here. All right, let's go on. Action in the mode of passion. Yeah.
How can a neophyte like myself kind of accelerate this process of devoting one's whole existence to just pleasing Krishna? Because at this point, a lot of the inner motivation for doing Vaidhi Bhakti is for personal gain, you know, liberation, I mean, freedom from pain, liberation, and just, you know, general personal reasons rather than for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. How do you advance that? Because I know...
The whole thing... keys on improving your remembrance of Krishna. We can't, you know, that this is what this is all, the whole society, the Krishna consciousness society, you know. So all of these things we hear, the rounds, the chanting of the holy name, reading about Krishna's form and his pastimes, we're meant to do that. So then when we do whatever we do, that remembrance is there. And it's just like, you know, a father working for his family. You know, so many times, you know, well, especially in India, everywhere, you have to travel far distances, even abroad, right? And you're working like anything. Well, I bet you they have their pictures in the, you know, in the wallet, and they've got, you know, in a little bunk bed, they got the, right? To remember why they're doing it. I'm working so hard, sending the money back, right? So the work is there. You're not enjoying the fruit. You're sending the fruit back to the family. But that bond of love is inspiring you, is motivating you to work very hard. But the key is the remembrance. If you suddenly get knocked on the head and you forget where your family is, where's the motive to work? So the idea is that we have to keep, you know, the sadhana aspect is the foundation for the enthusiasm to work throughout the day in remembrance of Krishna. Now that remembrance may falter. Because that's, you know, that's an advanced platform to remember all the time, but we should act out of duty. We're acting to please our spiritual master. It's very important to have that connection. Okay, I can't remember Krishna all the time, but I know I have a connection with the spiritual master. I know that he'll be pleased if I do this, if I do this, if I don't do that. He told me not to do that. I won't do it. You know, even though I have an impulse to do it, I won't do it. So you're thinking of the person who you actually contacted. This is the key, the intermediary. You know, the guru is the intermediary where you can really relate, you can hear, you can see, and so through that. And what is the teaching? You know, chant Hare Krishna. You know, the whole idea that Prabhupada would say, all these bogus yogis and leaders and gurus and everything, they're saying worship me. You know, I got onto a website. I can't resist saying it. It'll be recorded. Sai Baba. You know, somehow I got in. He's having someone write down his leela and filling in his name for Krishna leela in the 10th canto. And you just read these leela and you'll go, you know, you'll achieve perfection. It's crazy, you know. That's what, but Prabhupada said, I never said that. He never said, worship me. You know, he said, oh, we worship Krishna. You know, chant Hare Krishna. Now, of course, in the course, you know, we know that we do Guru Puja. But the idea is that we know that whatever puja we're doing, whatever is being transferred to Krishna, you know, it's a critical difference. So the idea is that to be Krishna conscious, we should never neglect that. You know, in all the hustle and bustle of doing service, is to try to remember Krishna. There's a nice 8-verse series which I call the Krishna Katashtaka. The Krishna Katashtaka in the 12th canto. It's the last teaching of Sutta Goswami. You know, he's speaking to the sages there at Naimisharanya, headed by Shamika Rishi, Shonika Rishi. And just before he practically gets up, you know, and goes, he's relating the Bhagavatam that he heard when Shuka spoke to Purigan. So he has this kind of reprise, I mean like a review, of verses we heard way back in the first canto, in the 5th chapter, when Narada Muni was inspiring Vyasadeva to write the Bhagavatam. So 3 of those verses are repeated in this series. And the reason why I mention it is because it's so nice. It begins with the word Sankirtan. Sankirtyamano Bhagavananda Shutana Bhava Vasanami Pungsa. So what he's saying there, I'll try to summarize because it's a little involved, but those who nicely hear and chant, you know, who absorb their minds in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. The pravishya chittam, Krishna enters the heart. Now, he's already there. It's a little different than Shunva Tamsaka, but it's the same idea. He becomes manifest. You feel his presence. And he cleanses away all the sufferings of the devotee. All of the bad karma, the abhudras, you know, the inauspicious things. Just as the sun rising knocks away the darkness, or a powerful breeze disperses the fog. And so the whole thing is back and forth, you know, about hearing. What do we hear? What do we chant? This is where our consciousness is formed, really. So then he goes back. That sound, which does not have anything to do with Bhagavan and Hoksha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is false and untrue and useless. Mishagada asati asatkata. That's asatkata. But on the other hand, and I love this section, there's six lines of long format of description of the glories of hearing and chanting. So he says, Tadeva satyam, tadohaiva mangalam, tadeva punyam, bhagavad dunodiyam, tadeva ramyam, ruchiram, navang navang, tadeva shashvang manaso mahotsavam, tadeva sho karnava shoshanam, ninan yaduttama shloka yesho anugiyate. So that those words, that uttama shloka, you know, those nice shlokas, you know, the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and, you know, those words are true, tadeva satyam, and they are auspicious, mangalam. Just by hearing, you become pious, tadeva punyam, bhagavad gunodiyam. Now, this word, I have to discuss with Gopi Puranadana how we translate it. But it seems to be saying that it gives rise in the hearer and chanter of those qualities, those divine qualities that we can manifest of Krishna's. You know, the first 50. You know, one attains the divine personality. He becomes purified. The natural personality of the soul. So that's bhagavad gunodiyam. Tadeva ramyam, very delightful. Ruchiram, tasty. You know, and navang, ever fresh. You never get tired. Tadeva shashvan manaso mahotsavam. An eternal festival for the mind. Great festival. Mahotsavam. And tadeva shokar, and it dries up the ocean of lamentation of the conditioned soul. Shokarnava shoshanang ninang. Shoka means lamentation. So that's, you know, but then on the other side, this is great, this is in the 12th or 13th chapter, 12th canto. So then he goes back, and he quotes a verse that anyone who's familiar with the first canto of Bhagavatam, hopefully it rings a bell. Nayad vachas chitta badang hare yasho jagat pavitram bhaguni. He compares those words, which may be very nicely composed, you know, think of Shakespeare or something, you know, but have nothing to do with the Lord who purifies the world, are like unto a pilgrimage, a place for crows. The other day, I don't know what's going on by my apartment, but there was a whole bunch of crows gathered in the tree, and they were doing their thing. Cock, 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 cock. I said, this is a pilgrimage of crows. You know, it's just like, it was aggravating the ear, you know, and it was, you know, I don't know what they were looking for. But it's reminded of this verse. So the wise don't go there, you know. That's the hunkses, the swans, swan-like devotees, they don't go to this pilgrimage of crows. But on the other hand, tadbhagvasargo janadaga viplo yasmin buddhi shlokam avadjman. Those words which glorify the Lord, even if every verse is imperfectly composed. You see, it's not material, it may not be so materially attractive. They are heard and sung and accepted by the sages because they glorify Krishna and they can bring about a revolution in this world's misdirected civilization. And then the third one discusses first about how that so-called knowledge that might be naishkarmya. Here we're talking about karma, activity. So this is activity which doesn't produce a fruit, but it's impersonal. Naishkarmya up achyuta bhava varjitam, devoid of the nature of achyuta. In other words, it's all impersonal stuff. Nashobade, doesn't look very well. Gyanam alang niranjanam, even though it may be alam niranjanam, unsullied by any gross material thing, but it's all about impersonal. Not so nice, nashobade. What to speak of, that activity which is fruit of activity. That's so good. So then he has two verses winding up, describing this whole idea of remembrance. So he says, now to Varnasham. He says, Yasakshiyame vapadishamaksharo shamo gun Varnasham achara tapakshutarishu avismati shridharapada padmayo gunanavara shavanararibi. So suppose someone very nicely does Varna and Ashram, he performs severe austerities, he practices yoga with devoid of bhakti. Then the only result can be yasha and shriya. Some fame or some kind of opulence. Going to a heavenly planet, tapaloka, janaloka, that's all under the herd, shriya. That's some kind of opulence. It's selfish. It's some fruit you're enjoying. And there's a lot of hard work for it. And ultimately we know from the Shastra that it comes to nothing. Because if you don't go back to Godhead, you're going to come back down here ultimately. So, but, on the other hand, avismati shridhara padmayam, unbroken remembrance of the lotus feet of Sridhara. You know, that's a name for Krishna. He who bears the goddess of fortune on his chest or whatever. Is a result of guna anavara shravananaranabhi. Nicely describing, following in the ways of the acharyas, the qualities and pastimes of Krishna. Gunanavara Shravana Adaradibi, giving honor to it, etc. And then the last verse, which I was very enlivened to see, was also quoted by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's in that big biography, multi-volume. There's a whole chapter on the shastras that he would read and the verses he would quote, and this is one of them. Avismati, now not Sridhara, but Krishna Padaravindayo, Avismati, not forgetting. Avismati, Sridhara Padmaro, Chinotya Badrani, Chashantanoti, Sattvasya Shuddhim, Padamatma Bhaktim, Jnanam Chavigyanam Viraga Yuktam. So, unbroken remembrance of Krishna, which comes, if we recall, from hearing and chanting constantly about his name, form, qualities. First thing, chinotya badhani, destroys the abhadras. This is the same thing as the first verse, right? Sankirtamana, the abhadras, the inner space, are destroyed. And shang tanoti. Shang is a word that means welfare, good fortune. Shankara is the name for Shiva. Because he makes he does good works, right, for everybody. It causes good fortune. So that's shang tanoti. Sattva sishuddhim. Your whole nature becomes purified. So, you know. And Paramatma Bhaktim, you attain devotional service for the Paramatma, for Krishna, which is accompanied by Jnana, Vijnana, and Vairagya, by knowledge, realization, and detachment. So that's the result of cultivating unbroken remembrance of Krishna, which is what, and everything follows from that, and all the enthusiasm that we're looking for will come from that. All right, activity in the mode of passion. Yattu kamipsuna karma. Sahankarena vapunaha kriyate bahulayasam tad rajasamudaritam. But action performed with great effort by one seeking to gratify his desires and enacted from a sense of false ego is called action in the mode of passion. And that's all around us. That's what everyone is doing. Okay. Anubandham chayam hingsam.
Anubandham chayam hingsam.
Anapeksha chapaurusham.
Anapeksha chapaurusham.
Mohadarabhyate karma.
Mohadarabhyate karma.
Yattatthama samuchyate.
Yattatthama samuchyate.
That action performed in illusion, in disregard of scriptural injunctions, and without concern for future bondage or for violence or distress caused to others, is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Excuse me. One has to give account of one's actions to the state or to the agents of the Supreme Lord called the Yamadutas. Irresponsible work is destructive because it destroys the regulative principles of scriptural injunction. It is often based on violence and is distressing to other living entities. Such irresponsible work is carried out in the light of one's personal experience. This is called illusion. And all such illusory work is a product of the mode of ignorance. So you can see the degradation. You know, the further you get away, action in the mode of passion, it can be regulated by the scripture. You know, if you're really eager to enjoy, okay, do this sacrifice, work hard, you know, and you go to the heavenly planets or something, you know. But whatever you do, don't just let everything run riot. Whatever feels good, do it. Whatever I feel like doing today, let me do it, you know. That's the mode of ignorance, and it leads downward. The more that your motivation is focused on now, or maybe the next day, you know what I mean? And the heck with tomorrow, you know, or you know, next week or next month, what to speak of my eternal welfare. That's more and more in the mode of ignorance and more animalistic. And it's paving a way for an animal birth. Those who die in the mode of ignorance take birth, born in the animal kingdom. So animals, they don't plan, you know, they just work by instinct, you know. I mean, even you see the beavers making the thing in the river, you know, but they're doing it by instinct. It's not that they write up a blueprint, you know, and they have a conference, you know. It's so Adam, we can also act like that. You know, I whatever feels good, do it in the street. You know, this is all motive ignorance. And you can see the result. The perfect example is like drug addiction. Taking a drug, whatever it may be. It means to heck with tomorrow, to heck with my future. I know that this is going to cause me horrible suffering if I, get addicted to this. But I'm just thinking of what the great pleasure is going to be now, you see. What's pleasurable now and then, horror in the end. Of course, that's motive passion, but this is really motive ignorance. So, in illusion and disregard of scripture injunctions. There's no question of any authority. The only authority is the impulse of your senses. And without concern for future bondage, exactly, like the drug business, or for violence or distress. So the thing is, if you don't know, this is why the knowledge is so important. It keeps talking about the Shastra. When we remember these two critical verses, let's just review a minute. Back at the end of chapter 16, right? 16 is all about the path downward, right? Violent, horrible activities of the demons. And what happens? They go to hell. It's as simple as that. So Krishna says there are three gates leading to this hell. Trivadam, Natakasedam, Dwaram, Nashanam, Atmana. Kama, Krodas, Tata, Lobas, Tasmarita, Tayam, Tujay. That lust, anger, and greed, right, are the doors that open up to this hellish existence, the wise person avoids, what is that? Etava mukta konteya, tamo dvarais to be in it, achadat atmanak shreyas, tato yati parangatim. So here's the stark choice that we have. He says, those who are able to avoid these three, now how can you avoid these three? You have to accept the higher authority of the Shastra and the structure, the sadhus. Because you're born with lust. You come into this world, ichadvesha samutena. You're overwhelmed with desire and hate. If you don't do anything, if you just grow up like, in the country, with your friends, you're just going to become like an animal, right? Because you don't have any culture. It's all coming from a higher authority. So etava mukta konteya, those who are able to avoid these, they act for their own benefit. Achadat atmanakshreya, for the benefit of the soul. Now, then the next verse is key verse. Yuk shastavidamutrija vartate kamakarata nasasidam abapnoti nasukam napanangatim. That those who simply act on impulse, whim, Prabhupada calls it, kamakarataha, having given up shastravidhi, the instructions of the shastra, they don't achieve perfection, they don't achieve the ultimate goal, they don't achieve any happiness. So then the perfect conclusion, tasmat shastra pramanam te karya karya vivastato, gatva shastra vadanoktam karma kata maharasi. That therefore, as to your evidence of what to do and what not to do, has to be the shastra, the revealed scripture, coming all from Krishna, or his authorized representatives. That's for our benefit. And having understood what to do and what not to do from Shastra, one should actually do it as a matter of duty. It's all for our own good, for our Shreyas, you see. Now, action in the mode of ignorance is exactly that. No scriptural control, no nothing. Just impulse. And the result is suffering. It's just more, you're bound up in the birth and death. And even in this one birth, I just thank Prabhupada so much. You live this whole life in Krishna kind, like almost 40 years now. Vyadabha has been over 40 years. And you can see all of the pitfalls that you have avoided. The drugs and the sex and the mental difficulty and the breakup in the family and financial ruin and physical degradation due to unclean habits, Those are just material things, that Prabhupada saved us. What about all the positive, But that you've been protected. If you're living this life, clean life, four regular principles, regulation like that, just on a material level, it's so auspicious, you see? You're protected. I remember in the 80s, you go through these decades, and the AIDS thing happened, this horrible thing. And I was thinking, I may have avoided that anyway, But here's this whole thing raging out there, and all I can say is yes. It's because the senses are out of control, it's illicit sex, and of course these things are going to happen. The abortion, Holocaust. How did Prabhupada, predict it or not? This rampant meat eating and cow slaughter, And now America has one, it's like the way of war. People just take it for granted. We're at war 10 years now in Afghanistan, you know. And people are dying, yeah. Our, you know, we're killing so many people, torturing these people. Well, that's just the way it is. It's not the way it is. This whole country is suffering, is going to suffer karma from that. You know, Prabhupada said, that's what happens. So how you act is the key, what you actually do. So here we have the karma of, you know, goodness, passion, ignorance. So we should act in goodness and add Krishna consciousness, and actually our life will be auspicious. Okay, now let's read this. Mukta sango naham vadi.
Mukta sango naham vadi.
Dhrityut saha samanvitaha.
Dhrityut saha samanvitaha.
Siddhya siddhyor nirvikara. Karta sattvika
uchyate.
So now we have the karma, now we have the karta, the doer in three modes. One who performs his duty without association with the modes of material nature, without false ego, with great determination and enthusiasm, and without wavering in success or failure, is said to be a worker in the mode of goodness. Purport. A person in Krishna, see, Prabhupada immediately brings in Krishna consciousness, because you can't do this unless you're in Krishna. A person in Krishna consciousness is always transcendental to the material modes of nature. He has no expectations for the result of the work entrusted to him, because he is above false ego and pride. Still, he is always enthusiastic till the completion of such work. He does not worry about the distress undertaken. He is always enthusiastic. He does not care for success or failure. He is equal to in both distress and happiness. Such a worker is situated in the mode of goodness. So, describing the transcendental worker here.
Is he himself?
But yeah, Prabhupada, you know, Yadava was telling me some of the incredible things in that struggle in Bombay, you know, to get the land. And it's such a saga, such an example for eternity. You know, how Prabhupada never gave up. You know, he with his genius, you know, he brought the deities there right away, you know, because the deities are not supposed to be able to be moved, you know, especially in India, you know. So he built everything around. And there was a tremendous struggle to secure the land from this cheating guy who tried to, you know, get a down payment and then cheat us out of the land. And, you know, Prabhupada never gave up, even though his disciples sometimes did foolish things. And, you know, he persisted. And it came out gloriously. And, you know, and even though there were so many setbacks, apparent setbacks, Prabhupada was never thrown for a loss, you know, getting overwhelmed by the anxiety of it or the depression and that. Steady, you know. And even in India, you know, a good example is when before he came to America, you know, he had the injunction to preach in English and to spread. So when he took Vanaprastha, I think it was before sannyas, he started this whole League of Devotees, you know, and it was just the precursor of the ISKCON, you know, the same kind of program. He had a place that he thought he had secured, and he was preaching there in Jhansi for I don't know how long, a year, a couple of years, you know. And he would go out, do kirtan, getting, you know, subscriptions, getting donations, doing the whole thing. And then, you know, despite his greatest efforts, that building was taken away from him for another purpose. He never actually secured the deed. It was on lease or something, you know. So suddenly he has no place. You know, I think he'd already left his business. And so he ended up, you know, going to Delhi and trying to print the BTG and distributing with practically no money. And you know, he went through real poverty for a while. But he was always determined. You know, he was never discouraged. That's the idea. That's the utsaha. You're perfect from Rupa Goswami. Utsaha nishayadaya. They have enthusiasm, determination, and patience. All of those three are necessary. And in what? Tattat karma pravartanam. In the regulated activities of devotional service and in following the mission of the spiritual master. To accept it as one's life and soul. Do or die. And if you die, what's the difference? You know, you died gloriously and you go back to the spiritual world. And if you succeed, wonderful. Then so many people can be helped. So it's a win-win situation, you see. But the materialist, it's lose-lose. If you don't succeed, you're certainly lost. If you do succeed, you're still lost, because everything that you gain is lost as soon as you die. There's nothing eternal about it, you see. It's all ephemeral. So this is the transcendental determination is there in the mode of pure goodness. Prabhupada is taking these and applying them to Krishna consciousness. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
So it says, one who performs his duty without association of the modes of material nature is in the mode of goodness.
Yes, Prabhupada's talking about transcendental activity.
Well, but I mean, that's in the translation.
Mukta Sangha. I understand that. Mukta Sangha means, you know, free of association and attachment. Association means bad association. And even, you know, even if you're with somebody, like you're on Sankirtan, you're surrounded by people in the modes of nature and by music in the modes of nature, maybe sometime, you know what I mean? So many things. But that doesn't mean you're in the modes of nature. You know what I mean? You can be free of the Sangha even by the force of your own consciousness. If you're chanting, if you're praying, if you're doing service, that transcendental service, then those modes, they may you know, affect you. But the idea is that someone who's really determined can go through that and not really be really affected by it, can be strongly Krishna conscious. So yes, this is a little bit paradoxical. Without association with the modes of nature, but you end up, this is a worker in the mode of goodness. So the idea is that Prabhupada is applying these verses to sattva, you know, to shuddha sattva, because he's adding in Krishna consciousness. So this is the Mukta Sangha is what he's saying without association. And it's really, you know, Sangha being attachment. You know, you can think of it like that. In other words, not letting the modes, the lower modes, infect you so that you become attached. He's fixed in the mode of goodness, which means calm and not disturbed either way. You know, if something bad happens, go with the flow, you know. Keep our enthusiasm. That's what I understand from this. All right, let's move on. Ragi. Ragi karma palaprepsur.
Ragi karma palaprepsur.
Lubdo hinsatma koshuchihi. Harsha shokanvita karta.
Harsha shokanvita karta.
Rajasak padikirtitaha.
Rajasak padikirtitaha.
The worker who is attached to work and the fruits of work, desiring to enjoy those fruits, and who is greedy, always envious, impure, and moved by joy and sorrow, is said to be in the mode of passion. A person is too much attached. A person is too much attached to a certain kind of work or to the result because he has too much attachment for materialism or hearth and home, wife and children. Such a person has no desire for higher elevation in life. He is simply concerned with making this world as materially comfortable as possible. He is generally very greedy, and he thinks that anything attained by him is permanent and never to be lost. Such a person is envious of others and prepared to do anything wrong for sense gratification. Therefore, such a person is unclean, and he does not care whether his earning is pure or impure. He is very happy if his work is successful and very much distressed when his work is not successful. Such is the worker in the mode of passion. So you can see the problem with this. You know, no matter how much you have, you can never really be at peace. Because, number one, somebody else has something else, more, that you're envious. And there's always the danger of losing it. So you have to try to get more and more. You figure, well, okay, I have $100. If I can just turn it into $200, then I'll be happy because I'll be more secure. I'll have more money. You know, $200, what's that? You know, I got to have $1,000. And before long, just imagine, have you ever tried to visualize, you know, or project yourself, what it would be like if I suddenly had, or if I was one of the few, you know, people on this planet, of which there are probably 400 or 500 now, who has $1 billion or more, you know, what would that mean? You know, I pay my rent, I get it. No. Yeah, you'd have that, but your imagination, what can I do with that? You know, what responsibility I have? And then there's also the fear. Suppose you have kids, or you have somebody, oh my God, somebody might kidnap them. They know that I'm wealthy. What's the use of having all this money unless I can flaunt it? So everyone knows I'm a billionaire. Now I have to spend on the security and worry whether my kid can go out and play anymore. You know, they have to have this special this, special that, right? And is that happiness? How can there be any happiness without peace? These are the words of Krishna, way from the second chapter. Yeah, ashanta sukhasukam, you know. And there can't be any peace unless you renounce this vihaya karma niksara, the desire for sense gratification. But if you don't have the desire for sense gratification, there's no way you're going to work hard to make $1 billion. You know, having $1 billion usually means that you had a, you know, step on the heads of a whole bunch of other people, right? And you know, you're at the top of the hill. But that very activity of having it, of wanting it, is contaminating for your soul. You know, I mean, this is right in the Bhagavatam. You read the fifth canto of the wealthy people who are always. It's right in the 16th chapter. How much money do I have today? Let me see, and by my schemes, I can make more. You know, and then of course in the tradition, I kill that enemy. You know, it's like the mafia. You know, they have their little. I killed him. Now I'll kill that guy. You know, now I'll make friends with him, and once I have, you know, his confidence, then I'll kill him. And I'll, you know, this is the demonic mentality. And the big demons are the ones you see who have the billions. They've climbed to the top, clawed their way to the top into so many corpses. But you know, what were you going to say?
No, I just had a question. I mean, you know, I understand that $1 billion for yourself is bad, but suppose I want $1 billion to build a temple, then would that $1 billion, would me working hard to achieve the $1 billion for a completely different goal, not for my sense gratification, but
that,
because
yeah.
I want to achieve something, would that be still considered in the mode of passion?
Well, there's a danger in that, you know. It's interesting you mention that, because Srila Prabhupada had that idea. In other words, he was already a family man when he met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was already partners in the business, right, pharmaceuticals. And so he wasn't, you know, he's very responsible. I think he had a kid on the way, or he had one child already. And so he's not just going to leave his family. So, you know, so he says, okay, so I'll do this business, I'll make money, and I'll help the mission. And he did that to an extent. You know, but the mission kept, the business failed at one point, you know. And he couldn't do that. So he realized that wasn't the real thing, you know, the thing that was pleasing so much to his spiritual master. That was good, but he was much more pleased when he was full time, when he was able to preach all the time. Even though, as I mentioned, he became totally poverty stricken. He had hardly a rupee to his name. It was either print the BTG or take breakfast. And so he always chose to print the BTG. So he became, you know, very thin. It was touch and go for a while. But that was more successful. Now, if you have the money, you know, like we have our wonderful Ambarish, who inherited so much money. He was Ford family. And now he's building a temple in Mayapur. $25 million. You know, he donated. Now, that's the perfection. But to do everything that's necessary to make that much money is in itself a contaminating thing, normally. That's the idea, yeah.
There's a show on TV called I Won the Lottery. And I just watched this like a couple nights ago. This guy won the lottery and went and turned his ticket into the store. You know, you're not supposed to mail it off, I think, or something. And he didn't sign it, and the clerk signed his own name, took the money, and left the country. Now, they hunted him down, and they've gotten back about $300,000. But he just didn't sign it, so you're from the very beginning.
Yeah, and there's so many stories. The lottery winners, the reason that, you know, because they're generally just ordinary schmoes, you know, who suddenly have $10 million or $1 million, and they don't know what to do with it. You know, like was mentioned, suddenly all of your relatives who are probably pretty poor already, you know, they're really friendly, and there's all kinds of people you didn't know were relatives who were coming up to you, you know. And who do you know, how do you know who your real friends are? See, this is even our Ambarish went through that at one point, you know. How do you know that he's not my friend just because he wants my money? And so that's, isn't that a nightmare? You know, better to be poor and pure, you know, this is my motto. You know, better to be, then you really know who likes you. Anyway, the point is that this kind of activity, which is everywhere, everybody is dreaming, you know, I can make more. And that's not the way society is supposed to be organized. You know, if you read the Varnashram system, there's so much charity. Remember, part of this was charity. You know, the Vaishyas, especially, and the Kshatriyas, are meant to be giving charity so that the workers can feel satisfied. Everybody should feel satisfied in their own position without being envious of the others. But that can only happen when Krishna's in the center, because Krishna himself gives satisfaction. It's like brahmachari life. You know, it's practically you're a pauper. But so much satisfaction, you can see, you know, to ordinary people. You know, we have to have a before and after for you, forgive me. We got to get some early pictures of that.
Yeah, there are some on Facebook.
Okay, it's Facebook. But I mean, the point is, it's directly experienced how you can actually become peaceful and happy, not by working for, you know, trying to make money for yourself, but actually trying to please Krishna. You know, by watering the root, you actually please yourself too. Yeah, go ahead.
As far as making money, is there a allotted a certain, you know, karma in terms of making money.
Right.
Like Ambarish was just given everything.
Right.
Some of us have to work very hard, and some of us don't have to work so hard, and that automatically comes.
Right.
The Prabhupada said in that regard, just whatever easily comes, take that, and that's your work. And
right. That's right there in the Bhagavad Gita. Yaduchaya lava santushtam. Be satisfied, which comes of its own accord. Because the, you know, when your mind gets too involved in this, you get in the mode of passion, and you can never be peaceful and happy. Okay, I think we should probably get
plus ready. When, you know, ultimately Krishna gave him all the money, Prabhupada, then he was...
That is a perfect example. He had nothing, and then he just preached, and, yeah, people
millions of dollars.
Go ahead, Srila Prabhupada.